Hi, welcome to Business Link. I'm Jason Ball, President and CEO of the Lincoln Chamber of Commerce here in the AOI podcast studio, the Chamber offices. Super excited about today's episode. Before we jump into that, I just want to note, if you're seeing this episode, catching it on social media for the first time ever, you can see all of our backlog of episodes at lcoc.com on our newsroom page, or you can also go to podcasthousemedia.com, and you can see not only our episodes, but a lot of other great programs that are happening in Lincoln. And I mention that because of today's guest. From KLIN, we've got the Jack Mitchell, host of both LNK Today in the morning and Drive Time Lincoln in the afternoon on 1499.3 KLIN. Jack, welcome to the AOI podcast studio.
Thank you. I'm sorry I dressed up more than you did, but it's not awkward for me if you want to wear that. That's fine. Glad to be here. It's exciting. Nobody asked me to be interviewed, right? Nobody really. My interview ratio is a lot more giver than interviewee, I should say. And so it's nice to be on, I guess, this side of the mic, especially with you, because we have our roles reversed twice a month on Tuesdays.
This is a fun little game we get to play today. Can Jason keep up with Jack?
Yes.
And the answer will be no.
I'm sure.
But
I'm sure you'll do well.
Well, it's an honor to have you here. Thank you for taking some time to get away and have a conversation.
Yeah.
Look, just before we get into lots of details, tell me, how does one make the, I'll call it maybe atypical transition from attorney into radio and from radio host into community institution all by oneself? Like how does that flow work?
So I'll try and give you, cause I know you probably don't have 4 hours for this. It is a rather long story with twists and turns, but I'll see if I can give you the Cliff's Notes version. When I was in college, I was interested in journalism. I mainly focused on the print side. I was the editor in chief of a small college in Northwest Iowa, Northwestern mm-hmm. College. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was editor in chief of the newspaper. I was a sports editor, news editor, opinion editor. I did a tiny bit, as in like 3 or 4 times, did some radio stuff, just messing around, playing CDs, basically, right? College radio. I thought it was cool that I could play the CDs I wanted to play and 13 people would hear them. So that was it. But I was always fascinated, not so much with music radio, but having grown up in Lincoln, listening to radio, to listening to local news radio, to listen to local sports radio, both of them. And I count people in local media as kind of my idols growing up, which I don't know if a lot of young people do, but for me, it was, you know, it was the Scott Youngs and the Kathy Blythes of the world. It was the John Baylors and the Gary Sharps and the Jim Roses in the sports area. And then even on TV, you know, Ken Shimmick and all of the Rod Fowler, all of them. I was really fascinated with them. I was really interested in them. And I liked talking about politics. I liked talking about sports. I liked talking about the Huskers. And I always kind of thought, man, if there was ever a chance I could somehow, you know, talk about those things, that combination of things would be amazing. It's kind of a pipe dream. At the time it seemed that way. So I finished college. I didn't know what I was going to do. I looked at newspaper jobs. They were all in small town Iowa. I didn't really want to do that.
Yeah.
So I talked to my advisor and he was like, did you ever think about going to law school? Because I think you'd do well there. I'm like, not really, but it does put off any decision that I have to make now. And so it was a
delay tactic.
Yeah, a little bit at the time, to be honest. I didn't it wasn't necessarily because I want to be a lawyer. Mm-hmm. I might have, but it was a little bit of, hey, I've got a good opportunity here, got a good offer from the university to come back home and study here. And I was fascinated, you know, with studying law too. So I went on and went to law school here at the university. And again, finishing up my third year of law school, I didn't have a job yet. And again, very competitive to get a job in Lincoln, which I grew up in. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there were some opportunities in Norfolk. There were some opportunities in Grand Island, some other places I really wanted to stay in. I didn't have anything, you know, a few months into my final year. So I was starting to get nervous. And I heard on the radio there was going to be a job fair at the Embassy Suites that was a broadcast job fair.
Yeah.
And I was like, let's just bring some resumes. I do some things that I've written. Let's just bring them and see if anybody says anything. And So I go around and I talk to all the radio station reps that were there. And I was like, this is going to sound weird. I've never done radio. I'm in law school, but I'm your guy. I'm your guy. And at that time, Mark Halverson was the general manager of this group that I'm at now. And he said, you know, I've always kind of been interested at putting someone with a law background on the air on a news talk station. I was like, really? And all of a sudden I was like, whoa, is this going to work? And then I didn't hear from him again. So end up taking a job.
Yeah.
Just a couple blocks from here. I just walked by it. Bowman and Krieger.
Yeah.
I was a civil litigation attorney at Bowman and Krieger.
Yeah.
Shout out Don Bowman, and did that for a few years. I think they'd be okay with me saying that's a big jump immediately out of law school to go to a small firm, jump into the litigation stuff. I did a lot of family law stuff.
Yeah.
I at times felt like I was in over my head.
Okay.
With that, and you know, had some successes, but it was very difficult. There's a lot to learn, going from law school to being a professional there. You feel like you really know how to think as a lawyer, but that's not always the practical things.
How to practice.
Yeah. How to do pleadings in Lancaster County District Court, what kind of hearings the judges have, what they require, what the court customs are, how to, you know, counsel clients really well. And some of that we talked about, but I felt a little bit in over my head. But I did it for 3 years. Sorry, my alarm's going off. And so then I got up one day. I was sitting at my, this is terrible. One day I'm sitting at my desk, my phone rings kind of like that. But it was my desk phone, and answering your phone when you're a lawyer, civil litigation lawyer, nobody's really happy to talk to you, right?
Yeah.
It's either a client who's unhappy, or a potential new client who's unhappy about what happened to them, or it's opposing counsel who's mad at you for one reason or the other, is what it seemed like. So every time the phone rang, I was like, sometimes. It's Mark Halverson from Triad Broadcasting. And he's like, my morning show host just left. I happen to remember or be going through resumes.
Yeah.
I remember yours. I'm going to cast a wide net. We're going to have a ton of applicants for this, but if you want to come in, I'll talk to you.
Yeah.
So I came in, I interviewed, came in again. They put me behind a mic, some kind of exercises behind a mic, kind of a mock show, condensed mock show. And I mean, you know how the story ends now. From what I know now, I would never have hired me. Not in a million years.
Was it choppy at first?
I can't believe they hired me. I can't believe they. I don't know what he was thinking.
Why not?
My 20s. Yeah. I was not good.
Yeah.
I don't know. Now, I guess you could say he had some vision about the whole thing because it ended up working out. But for me, if I were hiring someone now for a station, I would not hire that version of me. I would want experience. I would want someone older. Mm-hmm. I would want someone who's kind of had a more confident place in their life. I just, for the life of me, can't believe that he hired me, because I know back then, this was in 2006.
Yeah.
There were a lot of people who wanted to be morning radio show hosts then. Mm-hmm. It's kind of maybe a little bit of a different market than it is now. So, started. They put me with a co-host who had worked in top 40 radio in Omaha over on Channel. And for some reason, they put the two of us together. that went about a year before she left. And then John Bishop was already there. He was the news and sports director. Yeah. And they had John and me team up then in, I guess it would have been December 2007.
Yeah.
And that was when NRG bought Triad. And so NRG took over. My boss then, Andy Ruback, put Bishop and me together. And that was when things really started to click.
And that was the birth of Jack and John.
That was Jack and John in the morning.
I remember that, yeah.
Like 2007 to 2012 era.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. And
so that, so that was nine. So I took that job October of 2006. We're recording this in August of 2025. So about to hit 19 years.
Now, Jack, your show is just maybe a little bit different than other maybe morning and afternoon AM radio shows that I've experienced in other communities I've lived in. Some of those are maybe more, I'll say a little bit more explicitly political focused, where you know, your shows talk about the politics going on, the political discussions that are happening, but it's also focused on a bunch of other fun stuff, you know, Husker football and Husker sports writ large, some things that you know, people are more broadly aware of, and just kind of, I'll call it community engagement type of stuff. I'm curious to know, was, you know, was that a conscious decision? Was that an intentional decision that you said, I want this to be more of a community-wide show? Is it something you arrived at in a roundabout way? Like, how did you get there?
I think it was, I remember when I was just about to start the job, and I remember my mom was talking to me, and, you know, she said, in the 80s, everybody listened to Scott and Kathy on KFOR, and she said the one thing they were always proud of their community. And that was one thing that always came through, and they were positive about living in Lincoln.
Yeah.
And that like really stuck with me. And even Kathy just passed away a few months ago. And even in some of the write-ups about her, she kind of said, we didn't really talk about politics, which they didn't.
Yeah.
And so I kind of always had that in the forefront of my mind, that kind of advice from my mom, and at least have a positive kind of, even if everything isn't positive, everything, but that kind of be the overall feeling. It was harder in practice, I think, for a variety of reasons, because that was swimming upstream a lot of times. You know, I had a listenership sometimes that expected something different. I was, you know, the events, the news, the things to talk about. But I think as the years have gone on, and particularly in the last few years, I've really been able to kind of have the confidence in the concept and the confidence that, okay, well, you know, this, we've been around long enough now. I think I can, I think this works to do it that way. And it still is swimming upstream. It really is. Yeah. But it's always been bizarre to me that so many radio shows decide, well, we're going to right off the bat cut our audience in half.
Yeah.
Our potential audience in half. Because I always thought the goal was to get the most listeners.
Yeah.
And I think we have.
Yeah.
Because we didn't cut our audience in half. And we didn't, I don't try and cut it generationally in any direction. Now I realize you're not going to have too many 23-year-olds listening to a radio show, but we have some. You know, we have some. But across the political spectrum, across, you know, men, women, generational, my thought is always, well, look, when you're going to advertisers, you want to tell them, I got everybody. Listen, I got your prime demographic, but I got everybody. You got more numbers. You got more awareness with us. To me, that was all, that's always the game of radio. And so it has baffled me, to be honest, that the name of the game in talk radio has been narrow casting to some degree. And there have been some that have been successful. Yes. Right. Rush Limbaugh was wildly successful, had tons, but on a local radio basis, I just think there's no reason, especially in a city like Lincoln, even if I wanted to really try and only get part of a very dedicated audience, but that's a small one. And the other thing is, years of experience have taught me that whether it's radio, whether it's social media, that I'm not going to change your mind on anything by talking on the radio, at least anything that's like closely held. That's a passionate belief. I'm not going to change your mind. You're not going to change my mind when I do that.
Yeah.
Social media, we've all forgotten. We're not going to change anybody's mind. Why would we argue? Why would we spend all of this time arguing, you know, firing back and trying to win? You never win. You don't ever win. And social media has kind of made me realize that about radio, I think, to some degree. I'm not necessarily going to convince people of anything. So why don't I spend my time endearing myself to them? So when I do have something to say, when there's something important, I can pick it. And while they may not agree with me, they're going to trust me. They're going to know I'm not doing it for bad purposes.
You know, Jack, I was, you know, I mentioned moving from radio host into community institution, and I, you know, say that sort of to be funny, but there's some authenticity to that too. And I think it's partially, at least, because of that approach that you've taken about community pride and being proud to be in Lincoln and not, you know, sometimes I think Lincoln can understandably feel maybe frustrated about things that are going on. Every city has those types of issues. But at the same time, we got an amazing city. And I think you've been one of the best possible spokespeople for saying, look, let's not take for granted that things are pretty great here in a lot of ways.
Right.
And that's what I've always enjoyed about your program. It's a place where people can disagree and people can, you know, have those different views on what ought to be happening in the city. But at the same time, we don't lose sight of, you know, how good things right. are here too.
Well, I don't know why you would choose to live in a place for, you know, for five decades yeah. Yeah. if you didn't like it, to be honest. And I know some people may not have choice because of some circumstances, but most of us do.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So there's to me, and that's true of me. I do like it. I do. There's so many things I love about Lincoln. It's my hometown. I'm proud of it. Like, I'm proud to say that. And sometimes that doesn't jibe well with making, you know, having constant political commentary.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to be a critic, right?
Yeah.
On that sort of thing. And again, I have my thing. Listen, I've got my things, right? But, I don't choose to always bring them up because I don't think people have enough people telling them what to think right now.
Yeah.
And I'd rather find similarities, make people smile, make people say, oh yeah, I felt that way. Or I thought about that.
Yeah.
Today I spent 15 minutes. Now this is going to get people mad. Now here's a controversial thing I said today. I said, I think sweet corn is overrated. This time of year, people lose their minds. And it's fine. Look, it's fine. Please, I don't. Listen, ag industry, don't go after the chamber. This is my position. And it's fine. It's fine. It really is.
I think
is.
We've given them enough cause to be mad at
yeah,
us
that's
already.
True. Never yeah, mind. Yeah. You've already. I can't make anything make things any worse, can I? But, you know, but I had people write in and. But there are these universal topics that everyone experiences that I found that radio doesn't talk about enough.
Yeah.
Food, restaurants, the experience of going to the grocery store, nostalgia, local culture, events, the home team, parenting, raising a family in the city. There's tons of them. There's a whole genre of topics that people love.
Mm-hmm.
There's also news that is not politics that people are really interested in. Road construction, right? I mean, I guess there's maybe a little politics in that, but the practical.
Oh, but everybody feels the same way right now.
The practical aspects of it. For some reason, we have been sold this bill of goods by media that news is only politics.
Yeah.
And it just, it wears you out.
Well, Jack, let's talk about, because your show and how you have leveraged it to impact this community has gone so far outside of the box, right? Couple things I just wanted. One, I just want to fanboy for a second. I love Munch Madness. It makes my chamber heart burst with pride every year, even if maybe not 100% of the March Madness businesses are chamber members. I still want them to win, right?
Mm-hmm.
What a great celebration of the authentically amazing culinary experiences that we have in Lincoln. There, that gets back to that community pride. In Munch Madness, how long has Munch Madness been around for?
Man, Bishop and I started it, so it's been 13, I think we did our 13th year, maybe 2010, 2011, maybe 14. I should remember the number because we put it on the posters, but I can't remember, but over a decade.
So good. Every March, just this celebration. And at the end of the day, I think at least one of the goals that KLIN has is wanting to drive people into go eat at these
100%.
Places. 100%. Go experience.
Well, that's the main goal is because, well, there's a couple of goals. Number one, like I said, there are a whole bunch of topics that people love to talk about and love to hear about.
Yeah.
And food is a huge one.
Yeah.
It's a huge one. People love talking and hearing about the experience of going out to eat.
Yeah.
And so number one, in a selfish way, it helps me, you know, because people want to listen, want to hear us talk about it. People want to discover new places. It's another thing radio is great for in a local community is discovering the things you can do, the places you can go and patronize around you. And then the other thing is, like, every time I I kind of make a roster of, and for those who don't know, Munch Madness is it has evolved now. It is a 64 bracket style, like NCAA tournament, but with local restaurants. And we've kind of argued and debated the definition of local, which is a part of the whole shtick.
That's part of the fun.
It's part of the fun. And it gets tweaked every year and we argue about it. And, but what I always do is make a roster of the eligible restaurants, and it always shocks me. It shocks me, Jason, how many of them, me, who was in radio, right, who has done this tournament for all these years, who's lived in Lincoln for four decades, that I don't
still
know
finding
of,
out
that
about.
I every year a chunk of them, and if I don't know about them, can you imagine how many people don't know about them? And frankly, I'm tired of people always saying Omaha is such a better restaurant scene than Lincoln. And then I go to them, I'm like, have you been here? Have you been here? Have you been here? No, they've never heard of it. They've never heard of them. And so all of that comes together. And then also, yes, I mean, I respect these businesses. I especially respect the hustle that goes into running a restaurant I've seen it a little bit.
Oh yeah.
The hours, the profit margins, the all of the things. And I'm just glad people do it, so we have places to go, because going out to eat's fun.
Yeah.
It's always great when you hear, hey, we're going out to eat tonight instead of eating at home.
Yeah.
And so I think the idea is not, I always have to say this because some people get very competitive about it. I was like, I don't care who wins. I mean, I really don't. I want people to learn about these places and patronize these places. Yeah. Go, and I want the businesses to get a little love. Some of them are, like you said with the chamber members, some of them are advertisers, some of them aren't.
Yeah.
I don't favor the, I mean, I don't even really know who are and who aren't. But I've talked to a lot of the business owners, and they believe a rising tide in that industry lifts all ships to some degrees. And I think that's true. And then we see the restaurants kind of get to know each other through the process, or they'll be competing and they'll cross over and eat at each other's place. So that's the whole, it's just celebrating going out to eat locally, which I think like 99.9% of people enjoy.
What I love about Munch Madness too, and then I'll switch on to another topic here real quick. But the other thing I love about it is it's kind of combining two things that are sort of personal and intimate, right? You know, working in radio, inherently your voice is like going into someone's home. Sometimes on normal routines every morning while they're shaving or whatever. Like that's sort of an intimate thing. So is how we eat and the things that we love to eat. Eating is, food is usually something we surround family with. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's just such a neat combination of things that are so meaningful to people and how we spend our time every day.
And the one thing I always love hearing, especially is families, or, you know, groups of people in an office. Hey, we go, in fact, I started putting, I asked people who make our brackets, people who I work with, I was like, why don't you put a checkbox by everyone?
Yeah.
So people can put it up and they can check. And because I know in offices, they're like, okay, we're going to one every Thursday during this entire thing.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. So that kind of gets to what you were talking about.
And thank you to everybody that does that. That's so good for the economy. That's so good for these restaurants.
Yeah.
Jack, I don't want to miss an opportunity to ask you about, I like many of your listeners, listen every year that you throw down the gauntlet of the 60-degree guarantee. And I also made the mistake this year on the day that you did your walk to raise money for Morning Hope. I wasn't able to catch the show, during the live broadcast at the end of the day. And so I listened to that on one of the hottest days of the summer while I was out running. And I felt like I was sweating with you, even though it was a couple hours after you were done. But tell me about the birth of the 60-degree guarantee, and just how much money did you raise for Morning Hope this year in doing the 26 mile walk around town?
So the birth of it was, and again, I'm not good with years, but it was when, after I did the show with John Bishop, I did it with a guy named Dave Miller. That was his radio name. But Dave is his name. And we did the show for 4 or 5 years too.
Yeah.
And there was just one day. It was probably April. And it was another one of those, you know, fake spring days, right? You know what I mean? Where you are sure mowing season is coming up, the baseball games, chicks are going to be hatching, all of that stuff. Like spring is here. And then it's a high of 31 and with flurries. Yeah. And And I get, you know, if I had one critique of Lincoln is the winters get too long for me. Like, but that's why I had to do that if I had to critique anything specifically. And so I was doing the thing I do where I'm complaining about it and I'm trying to say, be positive and say, next week it's over, right? It is done. Yeah. This is the last day. And he said, what do you mean it's done? And I was like, winter, the fake spring is over. Real spring will be here. And he said, well, what do you mean? I was like, I don't know. It'll be a high of at least 60 degrees every day after today.
Yeah.
And he kept pushing me like Dave did. If you ever listen to Dave and I do the show, and he said, well, put your money where your mouth is. He was like, what are you betting? What are you doing? And I was
so this happened completely unplanned. This was completely
unplanned on live radio. Yeah, and I said, I didn't know what to say. And so, you know, my quick thinking radio brain didn't have a great idea. I hadn't planned on, I didn't know he was going to do that. And so I just blurted out, I'll walk across town.
Yeah.
I'll walk across the entire city. He was like, what do you mean you walk across? I was like, I'll walk from one end of the city to the other.
Yeah.
If I'm wrong. And I did not say it thinking I was going to do it. I thought it was a shtick. I thought it was a bit. I thought people were going to forget about it tomorrow.
I was just kidding in the moment. We've all been caught by that. Yeah, yeah.
And sure enough, as about a week later, it's one of those high, you know, of course, a forecast high of like 64, but the sun doesn't come out and it ends up being a high of 57 on that day. And so I don't know why I didn't think that would, but everybody remembered. And I'm getting screenshots of the weather, people's weather app every day throughout the course of the day. And so I can't really shirk on my promise. And so I said, all right, fine. I guess I'm walking across the city. I don't even know what that means. I didn't really even know what it meant at the time when I said it. I just blurted it out.
Yeah.
And so we determined that if I walked from Lincoln North Star High School to Lincoln Southwest High School, which were still kind of new at the time, a little bit new, I guess they were a decade. But that was 27th Street, kind of sort of from what felt like the north part of town to the extreme south part of town, all on one street. And that was, I think, 12 miles, and it seemed crazy at the time. And so I did that. And there wasn't any, I don't think we fundraised with it or anything. It was just kind of the stunt at the time. And then, of course, another couple of years, either year or two later, I got in the same position. And I was like, you know what? I'm mad about how that happened. And again, this was not me trying to start an annual bid
at the
time.
Yeah.
It's me. I'm competitive.
Yeah.
It's me wanting to say, I'm right. I called it.
Yeah.
And if people have listened now, I always say that they're going to throw a parade for me when I get this, when I get one of these right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they'll carry me down O Street and. and so I kind of started that, and then again I missed it, and so I walked from Holmes Lake to Oak Lake that year. And that year we added a fundraising element where we supported the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society because one of my friends had a child who had been diagnosed with leukemia. And then we did it. I'd probably have to go back and look at it all. And then in 2015 we did it again. So this is probably the third or the fourth one. And I walked a route that year. We tried something new where we made the route go through the city, and I would have businesses who would basically make donations, or people would make donations if I stopped and did a challenge or did something along the way. And I was raising money that year for, it was then a high school student named Doyle Trout in the area, who was a high school wrestler and had got in an accident and had to have his leg amputated. And it was just to support the family. I knew I had worked with one of his relatives before. And so that's why I did it that year. And people know the story. I've told it a million times now, so it's not difficult or anything. But that day, my dad and my mom showed up to kind of support me at the end. We had a party at a brewery afterwards, a celebration. And my dad died the next morning mowing the lawn unexpectedly, completely unexpectedly. And so that was that walk was basically the last time I ever saw him. And so I took the last picture I ever took with him was in front of the statue on the east side of Memorial Stadium with my mom and my dad in the last few miles of the walk.
It's a beautiful picture. It's popped up on stuff for this.
So that was the last picture I ever had taken with my dad. And, you know, of course it was very hard. There was tons of grief then.
Yeah.
But a few years later, I kind of said, you know, and I didn't do the walk because it was just I didn't even try because there was just too much tied to it. But, you know, eventually the grief feels different. And I said, what if I, you know, this feels like something I can't really not do and I shouldn't run away from. Maybe I could do some good. And so in 2017 or 18, I said I was going to do it again, or I made the guarantee again and failed, which again, I did not expect to. I really didn't. Yeah, yeah. Because I remember I was at my son was playing a baseball game and it went until May until it got broken. Yeah. It was like the middle of May.
Yeah.
And so I think I kind of had this decision after it got, I was wrong. And I said, let's raise money. I knew about Morning Hope, who, comes alongside people who have lost a loved one, kind of like I had. And I really was impressed just getting to know them. I started talking to Carly from Morning Hope, met her through that. And I said, I'd love to walk for you. I don't know that I'm going to raise a ton of money, but I would love to kind of just like raise some awareness. And so we did that, raise some money, raise some awareness. I've did a couple of more after that. And I came back this year and it was the 10-year anniversary of that 2015 walk where my dad passed away. And so I called Carly again. I was like, let's do it again. It's been a while, but I've loved raising money and awareness for some other organizations, but this is just kind of what it is for me now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so we did it. And we got a big unexpected anonymous matching donation right off the bat. I expected to raise, I think about $5,000 is what we probably did in 2017 or 18.
Yeah, yeah.
We got a $10,000 matching donation right off the bat.
Wow.
Which changed
the entire game, because the hard thing about it is when people do fundraisers, it's usually kind of like, hey, I will do X if we raise Y. Well, mm-hmm. I was already doing X, mm-hmm. right? You know, so it was hard to sort of have a hook, so to speak, on it.
Yeah.
But when we got those matching funds, we had to get to 10,000 to get the full amount. And that was exactly what the whole thing needed. And it blew up that day in a way my wildest dreams.
That's so awesome.
And we raised, I think the final total was close to $30,000. It was at 27 or 28 that night. And I think they had some more that have come in since. And I don't remember the exact number, but it was just under $30,000 that we raised for Morning Hope. And I'd kind of thought, you know, again, it'll be nice for just the exposure. I realized $4,000, you know, for a nonprofit helps, but it's not going to be life changing for them. 30's a little closer.
That makes a bigger bounce in the budget.
Yeah.
Well, so. Jack, that's the type of thing that, institutions like radio, community institutions like you are able to do to impact people's lives. So, we could fill up an entire hour with this.
I realize I talk a long time. I got to
bail on a hard stop, for commercials, I'm sure somewhere, but, Jack, thank you so much for letting us switch it up and interview you. It's been a pleasure today.
That was fun.
Hopefully we'll be able to do it again. Jack Mitchell, everybody, you can hear him most mornings in the morning on LNK Today with Jack and Friends, as well as Drive Time Lincoln from 5 to 6 in the afternoon on 1499.3 KLIN. Please go to, is it KLIN.com?
Yep.
Is the website. You can find out more in podcasthousemedia.com. For all the Podcast House Media episodes, as well as lcoc.com. This has been Jason Ball and Jack Mitchell in the AOI Podcast Studio. We will see you next time.